Beware, spoiler phobes, that you have stumbled into a storm of spoilers. From brightest day to Sunday night, no episode escapes our sight. Let those who want plot details light beware our power, the spoilers might. This podcast is split into two sections, the calm and the storm. In the first calm section, we're discussing the fourth episode of Lanterns on HBO. You know, the one with lots of dong illusions in it. This season, the second storm section is reserved for informed speculations from things like the trailer for the next episode. We have only seen what you have. We're not ruining, we're enriching.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power.
Hello, I'm Dave Gonzalez, and I resent Hal Jordan teasing me with the possibility of seeing the squirrel lantern.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I was aware of the Walt Disney wiener thing. And welcome back to Storm of Spoilers.
Wiener brag, hashtag yep. Wiener brag.
Yep. I'm a OG weenie ball knower. Oh boy, that's weird. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Before we get started, some housekeeping. Next week, as you may have surmised at this point, more Lanterns, episode 5 on the way. We're rapidly getting through this season, and then, you know, we got other stuff to do after that, but we'll tell you about that later. Here's how you can get in touch with this show. You can email us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Send us those ravens. We got plenty this week. Your questions, your well-meaning corrections, theories, if you have some lore questions, hell, even if you just want to suggest what you think we should cover in the future, I think those are fun emails too. Anything you want to say, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. You can also review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave us a 5-star rating. Say whatever you want. It is extremely helpful and we appreciate it. I got one this week, Dave, from Apple Podcasts from Turk5519, who says, "So glad you guys have decided to cover Lanterns. It's been great to get your point of view on the show and hear your insights. I recently rewatched Lost and included listening to every Storm of Spoilers Lost episode." Hell yeah. No matter what you cover, it's always great content. Keep it up. Thank you very much for those kind words. Continue to tell your friends. Also, Dave, someone commented on our Spotify, our episode 102 of Lanterns, that just said, "Nice call, Dave." Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure what that was referencing, but
I said, if you're going to be a manhunter, why be the big center of the town when you could just snuggle up to the person at the big center of the town, a la Zoe?
Indeed. Excellent. Excellent catch. You can also, if you'd like, subscribe to us over on YouTube, youtube.com/@astormofspoilers. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you like the videos. Leave us comments there. We're looking at those as well. That's the video form of the pod. You can see what we look like when we're doing this thing. And finally, if you'd like more from us, patreon.com/DaveAndNeil, DaveAndNeil. We are covering some really fun, under talked about Tim Curry movies on the Adventure Pod this month. So that's going to be fun if you want to hear us dissecting Fern Gully from last week or Congo this week. That's all very entertaining. You also get access to our Slack, which is where all the cool people are. And if you subscribe at the highest level, the $10 level, you can join us for Dark, which, as someone who has already done his Dark prep for this week can tell you, is really jumping off in season 3. We've made it to the final 4 episodes of Netflix's Dark, but you'll also get our previous watch projects from Twin Peaks, The Leftovers, Hannibal, and regardless of when you subscribe, the Dark pod will be there for you. So thank you all for subscribing on the Patreon, and that's it. That brings us up to date. That means it's time to talk about the weenie.
It is time to talk about the weenie. It's season 1, episode 4. It is called The Weenie. I made sure to stay tuned through the credits this week to watch the making of or the small behind the scenes featurette. It mm-hmm. definitely was like season one, episode four, The Weenie. And I was like, well, they did it. Because when I signed on to my HBO Max, it was still episode four. Right. And lo and behold, it is called The Weenie. It is written by Brianna Gibson. This is their first writing credit, mm-hmm. I believe, is what this note means. Not just on Lanterns, but overall, correct?
I believe so. I believe first writing credit anywhere, which is great way to start.
Yeah, they do some great stuff this episode. I'm definitely going to point out when we get a little further into the episode. It was directed by Greta Vasant Patel. I think I did that right because Gita. We have talked about this. Gita? Mm-hmm. There's no R in it.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. We definitely have talked about this director before because they are from good old House of the Dragon and also on some Ahsoka, which I don't remember where we talked about it, but if you are a member of our Patreon, chances are you've heard us talk about Ahsoka sometime mm-hmm. in the past several years it's existed. All right, let's talk about this week's show, though. This week on Lanterns, we begin in 2016, back in the space prison where Hal has gone to visit his old buddy Sinestro. They discuss Jon Stewart's real purpose. He's not Hal's backup. He's his replacement. Sinestro gives Hal a bunch of questionable advice on how to handle the Jon situation, including killing and or disgracing him. On Earth, Jon is ducking calls from the Guardians and buying a rifle scope from some charming locals so he could stake out the Macon compound. Being an architectural nerd, Jon locates the Weenie on the compound. He also explains what the Weenie is and how it's a term coined by Walt Disney. After securing permission from Sheriff Kane to infiltrate the compound, Hal and Jon devise a plan to tunnel underground. But as they await nightfall, Jon gets a visit from the Guardian, who tells him to take the ring from Jordan at the next opportunity. When it comes time to dig into the compound, Hal gives Jon the ring, and instead of stealing it, he manifests a giant drill. They have a heartfelt conversation about their parents, break into the Weenie to find some very advanced weapons, and are eventually captured by Macon's forces, who have a darkness gun. When they're presented to Macon, he asks Jon to draw his nude form, the Weenie, after a tense conversation and the exchange of threats. The sheriff shows up to take the Lantern Boys away, putting them under motel arrest until she could get more information about the benefactor. While they await Macon to send somebody, Zoe shows up for another hookup with Jon. She says it's the last time and encourages him to leave town, but as she drives away, boom goes a truck. This puts protective custody under a giant green dome as Jon dissects the satellite that killed Zoe. With the help of Sheriff Kane, they locate the company that made the killer satellite, Atlas Inc., owned by Hector Hammond, a rich guy for whom there are no records prior to 1986. The investigation continues at a slaughterhouse owned by Hammond, where the workers seem like automatons who are unbothered by the presence of the Lanterns, and the cow slaughter is technologically advanced, to say the least. They eventually locate quote-unquote Mr. Hammond, who threatens to blow up John's parents' house, plays a clip of John talking shit about Hal, and eventually caves after Hal threatens to murder him in order to find out if he's a manhunter. After admitting he's a human, this fake Hammond points the finger at Will Macon as the manhunter. But after calling the hit squad to tell them who they know, to tell them that they know who the real manhunter is, Hal reveals that he's on to John's deception, that he omitted the fact that he suspected Zoe was the manhunter for a while. And as payback for this deception, Hal does the thing where he jumps out of a moving car, leaving Jon to slam into a telephone pole. And that, it looks like maybe where we pick up last week, but definitely, or next week, but definitely where we leave this week.
Sure. It's a classic Hal Jordan move at this point. Jump out of the car, leave Jon to his own devices.
It is. I really like this episode that I think about halfway through I was unsure if I was liking it, because I think it does some very smart things that at the end of the episode resolve itself within the episode. So
sure. While
the episode's running, weird stuff's happening, dongs being hung, mm-hmm. Things are being sketched, people are having motel sex despite the fact that the pillow talk is about how they can't trust anybody. And I'm like, all this feels weird. And then at the episode, it ends with Hal Jordan being like, yeah, this feels weird, and then calls it all out, and we've recentered ourselves. So I think the triple fake out for at the end of the show is, I think, really good if you're a Storm listener and really good if you're somebody who thinks about spoilers. Because first of all, last week at the end of the Storm, we Googled Hector Hammond so that I would know things to say about this week and how he'd been used in the past in Lanterns. He's not a telepath in this universe if we saw the real Hector Hammond, but that's one fake out. Then we're told it's Will, and that allows us to go back in the car. And then we realize it all felt weird because both of them kind of know it's Zoe in that point. And so I would say it's only between you and your God, listener, as to which one of these fake outs you actually fell for.
Well, and I would say if you've been listening to both The Calm and the Storm of this very podcast, you've been skeptical of Zoe Macon for a while. Right. We were like, she could be the Manhunter. She could be the Benefactor. She could be a Yellow Lantern, maybe Sinestro's new protege of some kind. And I felt gratified that we were right to be weary of this lady who seems like she was trying to hook up with John for very specific reasons at the beginning.
I mean, that's the most understandable part about her character, I think. And I think the arms of Mr. Pierre in this episode will back that up for me. It's like, I'm not questioning why she came back. I'm questioning the sort of like why John was so into it, even though everybody's like, you know, now Macon's going to send somebody and then Zoe shows up. It's one of those traditional.
I mean, maybe he's enjoying the power move of just like, I'm going to just keep having sex with this dude's wife.
I mean, there's that. There's just always like a situation where I'm like, fearless. If you kind of, there's really no reason not to do it. I don't think.
She's a very attractive woman. And
yeah, very attractive woman.
She seems unarmed when she shows up at the hotel room. So I don't know if. But then again, you know, if John has suspected her of being the Manhunter, maybe that's part of the play, which is like, let me see if I can get more information via pillow talk out of her. And that supersedes any danger she presents, which is a risky move. But again, John is supposed to be like this fearless guy. So he's not worried about her like strangling him during sex or anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think also if it's a Manhunter, it has the capability to kill John without a ring whenever it wants.
I'm sure.
So why not just, you know,
but if she
it
also
wants to do that, it's going to do that.
She understands the thing that Will points out during his nude art display, which is killing either of those guys. Right. Like he says, like, oh, I can't kill Hal because that'll bring him like 100 lanterns to Earth. But he kind of knows that he can't kill John either, right? Like you can't kill a Green Lantern apprentice without catching some definite attention from the Green Lantern Corps and the Guardians. So, I don't question John's decision here at all. I think he's perfectly safe and having a good time.
Yeah, I had a lot of sort of like thoughts as this episode was going as to who I thought the Manhunter actually was. There's a time period where he's like, it's Will Macon. And they're like, of course. And they're driving. I'm like, no, it's not going to be like,
it's
Will.
Obviously Will Macon.
Yeah. Okay. I'm like that's too obvious. So it's going to be, I went so deep on Zoe last week that I was like, Zoe's too obvious. She's also a red herring because they're pointing too much at her.
Sure.
But I forgot that the show can move at whatever pace it wants. We could have a climax to the Manhunter story next week and then be moving on because we have other issues to deal with.
The question is, are you fully sold that she is the Manhunter at this point? Like, what's the confidence level? Because I still think there's a chance that she's she's obviously not from Earth and is something else, but it's a question of like, is she the Manhunter? Is she the only Manhunter? And if not, what is she? I'm still holding out hope for Yellow Lantern.
I mean, I also think that she could be the Manhunter, and what the ruse has sort of been is she doesn't want to kill him, but Manhunters and Green Lanterns don't get along.
Sure.
So she was like sort of like probing for a weakness, and she found no weakness. So now she's going to pretend to blow up. And when they come back and they're like, hey, We know you didn't blow up because you know you're the Manhunter. I wouldn't be surprised if we see like a flip for Zoe where it's like, well, you've chosen your thing. Because even when she's almost confessing to John, she's like, your choices are to leave town or die. Like, I think she does sure. see that as their choices. So it will depend, I guess, on what sort of we've seen in the 2026 timeline that the Macon compound is sort of like a crater. Mm-hmm. So I think something could happen there, whether the Manhunter does that or the Lanterns do that or some other third party sure. of these people looking for the Manhunters are doing that. I think it's still kind of up in the air, but we are getting to it much faster. I think part of my frustration besides the Manhunter fake out was this episode. I was like, we had speculated in the storm, and this is also the downside of speculation, is you can sometimes set yourself up for something the show's not promising, to learn a little bit more about what happened between him and Sinestro. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get that this episode. So I was like, oh, is this going to be another treading water table setting episode where we go around in a loop to realize that we learned nothing? And the thing that I didn't expect them was to reveal who the Manhunter was by the end of the episode, by basically like sure. the midpoint of the season, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we didn't get any information about what happened previously between Hal and Sinestro. However, the show did show some of its cards of where the bad dadness is. Yes. Right. Something we've been looking for ever since we saw Damon Lindelof's name on this project, which is that it's not necessarily that John's parents are going to be the sort of source of bad parentage, even though that's still debatable. The bad dads here are the mentors. Right. Sinestro is Hal's bad dad, and Hal is in turn becoming John's bad dad.
Or that's definitely how Sinestro wants to frame it. Mm-hmm. And which I think here's another great storytelling device that happens in this episode. Brianna Gibson, great job. If you want to make me doubt what I'm seeing, at the beginning of the episode, have the villain say to one of the heroes, oh, you should embrace the fact that John is like super powerful. You should encourage that in mm-hmm. him and get close to him to stab him in the back. Because then for the rest of the episode, I'm like, oh, man, are these two really bonding? It seems like they're bonding. They both got kind of sexually assaulted with a penis and one of them had to draw it. Like, you know, maybe mm-hmm. this is like an experience where they're coming together. They're talking about their parents. Hal talks about both of his parents. And I'm like, cool, this is a bond. But also, it's been planted in my mind that this could be him taking Sinestro's advice and sure. building a further barrier between himself and John to protect himself from the Guardians.
And I would say its placement is really good at the top of this episode, because this is the first episode in what feels like a while where we've had the two of them, Hal and John, together for most of the episode. Right. Like it's time to actually do a little training. It's time to do a little bonding. It's time to do a quick mission or two. I guess we could call it two missions in this episode. And, you know, I think that the show is continuing to set up to the extent that I'm now thinking like, OK, if Zoe is the Manhunter and she's the villain and she's going to have a villainous turn. Mm. What is her plan? You know, other than just like revealing herself as the Manhunter and using alien technology against the Green Lanterns, which is kind of the boring answer. But the more interesting answer to me is now that she has formed this bond with John and her team is obviously aware of the tension because they've been recording every conversation that's happened in the motel. Is she going to use that information and that connection to try and get, because, you know, like Will said, they can't kill a Green Lantern, but if John kills Hal, then maybe that's less of a problem for the Manhunters, at least. It's a big problem for John and Earth, but it's a plausible deniability situation where it's like, well, we didn't technically kill Hal. John killed him.
We also might be seeing at the end of this episode the breaking of the pair of the two Lanterns. Like, it might have only... We might have had one buddy cop episode to squeeze all the buddy cop stuff in, because like, what happens if Zoe's the Manhunter and that means John's like, she could get away. She like, if she leaves the town and, you know, she's left a town full of healthy people and then these other aliens come in and blow it up anyway, isn't that like blackmailing a Green Lantern? Like, that's not helping a Manhunter or anything. That's not just any sort of justice.
Sure.
That's
that doesn't terrorism. Make the Hit Squad the good guys.
Correct. So I think there's a world where, like, because the Guardians in this situation, as far as I know, are unaware that there's a Manhunter here. They're unaware that Hal knows about the Manhunter that Avanser brought to Earth. They probably know that there's a Manhunter brought to Earth by Avanser and just haven't told anything. But if the Guardians don't know right now the stuff that John knows about Anton and his five sort of hunting this Manhunter for genocide, then the Guardians don't even know that this is happening. So I want that to lead into our email that we got from Pat, which I do think is interesting in terms of what's at stake here, what needs to be resolved in this mystery. Because as far as we know right now, like, the mystery of the show is somebody kills Hal Jordan 10 years after all this happens.
Right.
So what we're really seeing is backstory for the mystery that we're actually doing. But here's what part of Pat's Ravens about the Guardians. Quote, it was interesting to hear the stewards to describe to Little John that the Guardians set cosmic rules for everyone. I mean, them calling themselves Guardians of the Universe is some pretty bold branding, but we don't really know what rules they're setting. They do assign a Green Lantern to a specific sector of space, which presumably includes multiple solar systems, but we're not sure what the GLs do. Fight space piracy? Probably they can do that. Enforce space tariffs? Collect space taxes? They probably don't do that, since the Guardians have advanced technology that pretty much satisfies their material concerns. There does seem to be a specific interstellar focus to the Guardians, and also kind of a non-interference policy when it comes to an individual planet's affairs. But it might just be the case that they don't want Hal to get involved in Earth's geopolitics, because Earth is not of interest to the Guardians. They seem to have specific things that are in their sphere of interest in the comics, and things that they never show interest in, although some of that is defined by who wants to bother them. The weaponers from the antimatter universe of Quard are often thunder-gunning for the Guardians, so the Guardians are therefore invested in foiling their plots. But the Guardians have never seem to want to take on Darkseid, so the parademon forces of Apocalypse haven't been boom-tubing onto Oar, or vice versa. Although, to be fair, this might have happened in the comics and I just missed it. Now I have to do research. Anyway, I hope the show gives some more insight into what the Guardians are interested in when it comes to quote-unquote the universe. Are they just some kind of combination of Star Trek's The Federation and E.E. Docsmith's Galactic Patrol? They only mobilize or exert control on long-standing adversaries. Yes, all that, Pat. I can't wait for them to decide. I mean, was shocked when Laura Linney was like, all right, just take the ring. Next time he gives you the ring, just refuse to give it back. And I'm like, yeah, that's how it happens?
Sure. Well, I mean, they're playing fast and loose with a lot of these Green Lantern rules. But I do think it's a very important question. What are the Guardians interested in, right? Which is like, is it just that they are there to keep the peace in the sense of like, not allowing one super technologically advanced species from one part of the universe to genocide someone who's not technologically advanced on the other side of the universe, sort of thing, right? I think that's perfectly normal, right? Like, you know, if Earth is a pre faster than light travel society at this point, you don't want the Vulcans showing up and eradicating. The Vulcans are bad. They wouldn't do, The Vulcans are good. The Romulans. You don't want the Romulans showing up and just roasting Earth for no reason. So like, if that's the purpose of the Guardians, fine. But I think Pat raises an interesting question of like, what else are they really interested in? The other thing is the rules of the Lanterns, which apparently the Guardians set, are now curious, right? Because apparently if you put the ring on and you just say the thing, apparently the ring is yours now. Like, does the ring know that? Does the ring abide by that? The ring, we're also told the ring has some level of sentience on its own. So could it be stolen by somebody with nefarious intent who is just a fearless bad guy? Or is there more to it than that? The other question I had was, in the scene where John manifests the drill, and or is about to manifest the drill, and Hal gives him the ring, he like pauses for a second and almost does this like face where he's like thinking very intently. And I'm like, is he doing the oath in his head? Like, do you have to say it out loud specifically in order for it to work? Or can you
here's the thing.
Say it in your head and now the ring is technically also yours?
The Green Lantern Oath is like said, while you're recharging the lantern. We've seen that. That's when we've basically seen the oath. Right. And then we've seen the oath.
Hal says said, it very quickly.
Right. And then we've seen the oath said by the alien captor in the first episode. And Hal doesn't like it when somebody else is saying it. But then we also have talks about what lanterns should or should not do according to their oath. Mm-hmm. In Superman the movie, Guy Gardner, I think Hawkgirl makes a joke that anything Guy Gardner doesn't want to do, he says it's against his oath. Mm-hmm. That implies there is a different conversation. That implies there is a galactic rule book. Mm-hmm. That implies the Guardians say something else besides take the ring and say the oath. Because I think you're right. If take the ring and say the oath is all you wanted to do, you would have Green Lanterns all over the place that were not worthy by anybody's standards because they just take the ring and say the oath. Like the sure. ring doesn't.
Well, especially on Earth, the power where to resist you. Hal Jordan seems to just like leave it places.
Well, like, I like
Hal gets drunk, leaves ring on bar. Random dude from Nebraska is now the Green Lantern.
Yeah, I saw a conversation on, I think it was the DCU subreddit, about if on the TV show Lanterns, the ring has like the recall ability. So usually like the wearer of the ring could be like, ring, and the ring would like fly to him.
Like Thor's hand.
And that's, yeah. And that's how it kind of works in the comics. But there was a conversation, very smart conversation by DCU fans, sorry, not EU anymore, DCU fans,
right.
About how like, yeah, but like cinematically, you get that once to be a cool thing. We know it's there. So we know Hal doesn't even care if anybody's like looking at the ring, touching the ring, because Hal knows he could just go whoop and like get it back wherever right. he wants. It also makes the fact that when he gives it to John, if he could recall the ring to its rightful owner and only the rightful owner could do that, he's not going to care if John puts it on and says the oath, because once again, the ring decides. So who cares? Hal could just be like, you know, whoop,
sure.
And then it'll come and like get on his finger. So, but the commenters were right.
What does the ring think about this situation is an important question we should be asking.
But it's something that you could kind of only, once you do a scene like that, you answer it. So if you have Hal recall the ring, you've answered that question. You take away the jeopardy of that moment that you're talking about where Jon Stewart might be doing it in his head, might be thinking about it. And so there are some indications where the more we know the rules, the more we know what we're seeing. And not to lead too much into Dark, which you're watching on a whole other podcast, but that is a type of mystery storytelling that I wonder if we're going to get what Pat wants, which is some sort of galactic law meeting. Or maybe that's where this story has to end with Jon Stewart, is he needs to accept it like the real way, and then he needs to go have the meeting. Sure. He needs to go to Oa and talk to the
He needs to accept
Guardians.
The full terms and conditions of Lanternness.
Exactly. Because like the ring can pick you, but the ring seems to pick only in emergency situations. Like Abin Sur was dying, it picked Hal and bypassed Jon Stewart's father. Out of like whatever sort of programming it has. The fact that the Guardians are trying out this other like substitution system just makes me wonder what the rules are. Mm-hmm. At this point, I'm like, the fact that it's always showing up looking like Laura Linney is kind of weird. And the fact that they're like, go to a phone booth, and he just doesn't go to the phone booth. And so they just blip over to him. If there's a reason to go to a phone booth to ensure authenticity, you can't trust the thing that just blips in on you. That's the whole point of like having a secure method of conversation.
Sure.
So I like where John's at the end of this episode.
Well, and we're also dealing with an antagonist who is a shapeshifter.
Yes. Until you remove its heart, and then its heart reverts to crystal.
So I don't know how long this process takes for a Manhunter to change from one form to the other, but we saw a Guardian do it in like 5 seconds in the scene with John's mother. So if it works the same way for a Manhunter, Laura Linney could have been secretly the Manhunter this time around.
Yeah. I mean, it's very possible. But then you were like, well, why does the Manhunter want Jon Stewart to take the ring? Is because I thought like she liked Jon Stewart even more. And when we get to Hector Hammond is only talking to Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
I guess that's a good question.
I mean, maybe they're operating under what Sinestro says in the first scene, which is John isn't Hal, and John is more of a, you know, if John truly is fearless, then he's more controllable than Hal, yeah. Right?
Which we see when his parents are threatened. I was kind of surprised how much he was against the idea of his parents' house blowing up. Because I'm on the side of the podcast that his parents seem a little bit like dicks. Just a little bit like dicks. Yeah. We got an email about that. This is from Ross. It said, I'm not even into the storm yet in the current episode. This is about last week's episode. But gosh darn it, I had to send it a note after the R. John's parents bad discussion. Short answer, yes. Long answer, yes. Okay, bad joke. But here's probably one of the many parents writing in with a similar response. We can agree that John's parents set out with good intentions for their child. When one of the Guardians of the Galaxy universe pop up and say that the kid of yours has potential to be a cosmic-powered superhero, it is inspiring. As was noted in the conversation, all the parents want to see is their child succeed, be it as simple as knowing how to do their laundry, as complex as winning the Nobel Peace Prize for a brand new category that only had to be invented because the science was that revolutionary. What good parents do is avoid putting their child at risk of being in harm. Yes, injury can occur at a soccer practice, falling off a playground set, even getting out of a bed. My kid has a scar from that one. But the key part of this is weighing the benefit versus the potential harm. The likelihood of being killed or seriously injured in any of the aforementioned examples is pretty slim. But let's look at what's happening to John. John is literally being shot at on a regular basis, and I bet their neighbors love that. And being dropped off to walk alone at night through some of the scariest neighborhoods in the city. His parents' drive to make John fearless is also purposely putting him in situations where the likelihood of serious injury or death are extremely high. And that's just the physical side of it. At any of these moments, something unexpected or terrible could have happened. Someone honks their car door as the trigger is pulled. Call it fate or call it luck, but John avoided it. However, they're absolutely inflicting emotional harm on their kid. Think of all the ultra-conservative religious parents who believe it's their kid's best interest to be isolated from their peers, kept away from popular culture, and asked to prove their faith and devoutness to God in ways that are frightfully or emotionally harmful. We'd probably be calling those parents bad parents too. Except here, the God is a Green Lantern. John is not a beneficiary of his parents' decision to raise him in this way. He's a survivor, and that's one parent's take on the situation.
All right, I mean, fair enough. I actually think that's a really interesting comparison with religious, strictly religious parents versus these parents who are strictly devout to the idea of John becoming a Green Lantern, which I think, you know, that shades things a bit. And makes them a little bit worse, where if you think of them as like religious zealots who are basically doing anything and everything to make sure that their son is ready for the coming of the religious awakening, which would be, I guess, him getting the job. So, yeah, I mean, maybe. I think the show definitely wants us to embrace the nuance of the situation. Which is,
I would say this is where we're definitely embracing the nuance. I want to give it over to Ross that, like, what he described is a good way to think about raising real world children.
Right.
I think you and I, as fiction and adaptation experts and non parents, were approaching
childless
it from
fiction and adaptation.
Yeah, I think. I've at least, you know, weighed that this is the responsibility, and like, I don't want that responsibility. And that's part of why I don't have a kid, is it's just like, you have to let them grow, but also keep them safe. And I'm like, I feel like I could do one or two of those things, you know, like the balance of which one and the other, that's a little bit different. But I do like this take on the fictional story, and I do like in the DCU. And as I said, you know, last week, I can't wait for John Stewart and Clark Kent to have a conversation about did they have good parents or not? Mm-hmm. Because I think Clark would be like, you know, they had some controversial views, but they saved me. And right. John would be like, no, they didn't save you. And my parents didn't save me. They're still on me. But they're basically telling me to call the principal. I'm in the middle of a case. Like, do they trust me or not? So sure. I get both sides of it.
And it's kind of funny because I think maybe this is going to be a recurring theme in the DCU for a lot of these heroes, which is you know, maybe their parents were bad. Even the parents that we thought were doing the right thing, right? Like traditionally, Superman's parents are doing the right thing, sending him from Krypton to Earth, saving him from the apocalyptic events that happen on their planet. But James Gunn very, very specifically makes the choice in his first Superman movie to be like, yeah, but they were also a little weird. They also had some fucking weird ideas about what Superman should do to Earth, which isn't entirely like, you know, we're not surprised that Lanterns has this because it's a Damon Lindelof joint. But I also don't think we should be surprised about James Gunn, because like now I'm thinking of that second Guardians of the Galaxy movie where it's basically all about how Peter Quill's father is an evil planet. So
spreading his seed all around the galaxy.
Maybe they are
literally and figuratively
spiritually twinsies. James Gunn and Damon Lindelof, and that's why they find themselves together here.
Yeah. I don't think you should shoot at your kid unless you're teaching him to be fearless on a TV show. Then you should probably shoot it at your kid. Like,
sure.
I think this episode was weird to have Will Macon sort of threaten everybody with a penis, but it did sort of tie the whole room together for the weenie thing.
Sure.
And it was like just weird enough, like the cow slaughtering. That's like weird. Mm-hmm. There's just like little bits of weirdness here in the show.
And, and
what it does is it puts you on the back foot and it makes the scenes interesting.
And I also think the show is doing a really good job of not fully showing its hand with the relationship between John and his parents. Because like we get all the stuff that he says about them last week, where it's like he seems like he still loves his parents and appreciates the what they did for him because it got him where he needed to go. But he's also lying to them through this entire episode, right? Yeah. Like his multifaceted levels of deception are to all of his parental figures, the Guardians, his actual parents, Hal, you know, even the audience. We don't entirely know what John's thinking these days. So I think that is it's important to note that even though John may say, oh, my parents were good because they got me, you know, ready for this, but I don't know if that's true. I don't know if he truly believes that.
Also, inherently, his parents, I appreciate that they are trying to make him exceptional in a system, but they are doing that to make the father feel better. As if I watched last week's episode correctly, or make the mom feel better. Like the mom as a teacher, I think had tools that she obviously offered John's siblings to raise children with some fear, but seemingly in a fine household.
Sure.
And instead they sort of sacrificed John to the authoritarian regime that his father was not good enough for.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it does seem like it is a situation where on one hand, you could say they're doing this to pay the family back for the slight of not understanding why John's father would say that he's afraid. But on the other hand, if you're just cynically looking at it from the Guardian's perspective, there's a really great way to engender some loyalty from their next Green Lantern, which is like we bred you for this essentially, and you owe us big time. So don't, you know, when it comes time for you to step in and take over for the guy that doesn't listen to anything we say, we need you to be very obedient. And I think that is part of that is maybe a theme that the show is working with, which is like John, the expectations of John's obedience and how that actually manifests when the time comes.
I think it's bad dads all the way down. I actually am fine with the sort of giving Jon Stewart a actual bad dad, because Hal Jordan's dad has to be dead, and also he gets to substitute in Sinestro. I'm fine with the substituting in Sinestro being our Lantern substitutions with bad dads. I don't know how much that I want that theme to bleed into other humans. Like, I don't want Carrie to sit down and being like, my dad was really tough on me. Like, sure. I don't care about that. So I do think where it does show up, it is thematically strong. And at least right now, all the like actual bad dad connections are tied up in the rules of the Guardians. Mm-hmm. So the things that make these people bad is we think John Stewart's family are bad parents because they're abiding by the rules of the Guardians. We think Sinestro is a bad parent to Hal because he broke some rules of the Guardians. And we think Hal is a bad parent to John Stewart because he's resisting the rules of the Guardians. The series is going to flip us on the Guardians. That's what the storytelling is telling me. That's what this season's right. building to, which again has nothing to do with the Manhunters, but probably has something to do with why Hal Jordan's dead in 2026. These are all just me guessing in the bad dads are being deployed strategically mm-hmm. Because when it doesn't have to be a bad dad, they get to freestyle jazz and we get cool things like laser cow dismemberment, a pretty funny gun buying scene that I thought was going to be about racism, but ends up being about like, just be super nice and have $1,000, which is fine enough, you know? So I think it just, and you know, the dong scene. Sure. So I think like it's able to have all these fun, ways where it goes completely sideways, like a flesh eating plant earlier on. But that's only because when these themes, these earthbound themes do pop up, they're popping up everywhere to point us in a direction. It's been a very craftily sequenced episode series so far, because I also feel like this could have been like episode two, and then this could have been like episodes five and six if we mm-hmm. did all the flashback stuff at the top of the season. It really is sort of like a reveal, a stack of knowledge cards that we have to have revealed to ourselves to lead us in hopefully the proper direction.
Sure.
I don't know. We try not to lead them astray, Neil, as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to some corners that are going to have us talking about other aspects of the episode. I think the most True Detective thing about this episode is we finally get some car rides with lectures from the driver, specifically Hal Jordan. Neil, last week I was like, we spent a lot of time with John Stewart. I was really starting to be on John Stewart's side. At the end of the episode, I'm like, yeah, maybe you would kill Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan seemed to have really messed up your family. This week, I think we got to see Hal Jordan being a cocky ass, but also right every mm-hmm. time he did something.
Extremely competent.
And very competent, which made me think the times where he was like, I'll just fly in. And John's like, you aren't thinking about the snipers. I'm like, of course he thought about the snipers. He was just seeing if you would say anything. Mm-hmm. Did this episode, I guess, where are you in what Hal as a character wants? What is he doing here? As of this episode's additional information of he's competent and he's also very lonely.
Sure. And making jokes about getting laid in space. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's interesting because, you know, we talked about John sort of having these multiple layers of deception by omission with various characters in his life. I feel like we have to assume the same about Hal. But it's more about a conversation between Hal and the audience, where yeah. Hal is not showing us the full spectrum of what he knows, what it means, and what he's going to do about it, right? Like, it's funny because I think the show is continuing to drive home this idea that there's a wedge between these two. But I feel like Hal doesn't actually mean John any harm.
Yeah.
In the sense that I think that Hal just, he, you know, maybe he's, there are times when I think that he really wants to continue being Green Lantern. And then there are scenes where, because of how nuanced Kyle Chandler's performance is, I'm like, this dude's eventually just going to give it up. Like, he's eventually just going to turn it over to John, and maybe even fake his own death. We'll see. And because at every turn, whenever it's time for Hal to make a very important decision, like you said, he makes the right one. He makes the right one, and it looks like it's the decision he was going to make the whole time. So I think that, you know, even this like slamming the car against a phone pole at the end of this episode is all kind of part of the training, right? Like he's still training John, even if the next couple episodes have them at odds. This is still, there's some important lesson at the end of this that John will need. And I think that, you know, Kyle Chandler, like I said, his performance is doing a good job of like towing that line where I don't really think for a second that he is buying what Sinestro is telling him to do at the beginning of this. I think he's like five steps ahead of everybody, even the Guardians. And I think that's kind of going to be the point. And, you know, it remains to be seen, like how Hal Jordan excises himself from Green Lantern duty eventually and leaves it to Jon Stewart to go off and be in a bunch of movies. But we'll see. I think that's, and that also is a very true detective thing where it's like, there's a certain level of so much competence that you could see this character plotting his own doom, right? Like he's going to walk into the perilous situations and know that eventually he won't make it out. But that's what he intended all along.
I mean, I like that take on it. It does feel very, very true detective to have that happening. You know, I like that as better as our most true detective thing about this episode.
It's don't care if
our
I
older
die.
Cop's gonna die. He's ready to die.
I don't care if I die. Well, we just got to get the Yellow King, you know.
That's right. This week, good week for ring manifestations. Giant underground drill that is assembled in parts. So great job, 3D modelers.
As opposed to the sort of quick hits that we get from Guy Gardner in the Superman movie, this is a really good way for them to A, spend their visual effects budget, but B, show how the ring works and show how it's not just about John being able to conjure something. It's about John being able to build something with his mind, right? Like the watch in the last episode, he builds it by piece with all the little gears and shit in the watch. And with this, it all kind of comes together. So it's not just like I can manifest a giant hammer, which, you know, that might be Hal's style, but it's also John is on another level where he can manifest very complex mechanisms that have many, many moving parts, and that requires him to think about all the moving parts.
Yeah, I think that's the only hint that we get really that John has been thinking about Zoe is he's been sketching her as well as like the map to the Macon compound and like sort of his artistic in nature, being able to bring like an understanding of things to the manifestation, I think is absolutely great. I also love that so far, everything John has manifested has been super intricate. We didn't see him manifest bubble wrap, but we know bubble wrap is super intricate. It is a bunch of air trapped inside like a thousand little bubbles.
And a very complex solution to his very urgent situation, right? Like, you know, we've seen Hal manifest a few bubbles. They're just bubbles, single bubbles, which I could have also worked for John in the car crash, but John chose bubble wrap instead.
Yeah. So this week, when they cut back to the motel and it has like a giant, just like a basic giant, like dinner plate over it, I'm like, that's Hal Jordan being like, okay, 100%. We'll just protect the sky.
Yeah. That's Hal being like, let's put a beanie on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Giant green beanie.
So we got that giant cream dome, we got the giant underground drill, we got the blood splatter resistant bubble in the slaughterhouse, and the 185 pound-ish kettleball that is so that Hal Jordan doesn't set it off. Good movie, great movie. accurate racial politics of set it off in the good movie, great movie exchange. That's our ring manifestations.
Sure. The kettlebell is also a fairly complex, even though it's not a complex thing, right? A kettlebell is a solid piece of whatever they're made of. I have a couple and they're just heavy. But like he could have just made a 185 pound ball.
I thought because he keeps sketching people, he was just going to make a Hal.
Oh, like, yeah. Boom. That could have worked.
But I don't
know. Too complex, though. He'd have to manifest all of his internal organs. And...
Well, also, like, the way that we're talking about, like, the ring recall, once you manifest a humanoid, that's like, why wouldn't he do that all the time? So, right. like, it's a card you got to wait for in your VFX deck / your power creep play card is creating an entire human. But yeah. I did think for a second, just make another Hal. or a giant boot, I thought would also be funny.
Sure. But, like, but that's these are basic, too basic for John. John's coming up with clever solutions.
Right. That's my problem as a viewer is if I had a Green Lantern ring, I would have Looney Tunes powers because right. that would be the first thing I think of.
You'd be on the Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner end of the spectrum. I would probably right. be there right there with you because I'm not a good artist or an architectural nerd. But, you know, none of us are Jon Stewart.
If I'm falling off a cliff, I'm thinking giant down pillow, maybe trampoline. I am not thinking
maybe
like
parachute.
Any. Nope.
No, I can't. Not even parachute. Okay.
I can't think of a parachute that fast. I'm falling. one of my biggest fears of like skydiving is I won't have a backup chute or I'll use my parachute. Something will go wrong. I'll get tangled in my backup chute. And like, that was the backup chute.
Hang glider.
So I'm sitting, I'm falling.
Maybe
I'm
I am more like, on the Jon Stewart side of things. Cause I got all kinds of cool stuff that I could manifest.
Neil's like, why do I have to be falling? I'm like, something should stop the fall.
I could manifest myself an entire jet to be inside of and fly away.
Yeah. Also, I could fly, and I've not thought about this because I'm like, I got to think of a giant pillow with and all of the feathers inside, or I'm screwed. Mm-hmm. And that would, I think,
can you manifest a portal?
Can you manifest a portal?
I mean, we know that portals exist in this world. Obviously, that's how the cow gets into the room.
But right.
Could you manifest a green portal that would just, or here's a fun one. If you're falling off a cliff, manifest a tube system where you fall into the tube and it loops you back up and shoots you out the other side. So then you're just flying up. That's fun.
Yeah. Like a water slide.
That would
like
be an awesome Green Lantern.
Yeah. Well, better you than me, because I would, mostly Looney Tunes logic. All my bombs would be circles with burning wicks coming out of it. That's just the way that I, live my life.
I'm the Wile E. Coyote of Green Lanterns.
Essentially. All right, Neil, I think there's some great stuff to talk about in the storm this week because I do have some thoughts about where we could be going, but also we're halfway through the season and we seem to be getting some stuff right by just thinking about stories. So mm-hmm. Is there anything that we want to talk about in the safety of the calm before we transition into the storm?
I'm feeling good. Let's do it.
All right, into the storm we go.
As one of my gut always told me, that crash was no accident. When it says there's a shitstorm en route, I make sure there's a lookout to tell me when it's fucking coming.
All right, we're back. And first, we have to inform all of you, don't sleep on Larflees. I'm going to explain myself, but I just wanted to do that for our listener, Charlie, who has requested some things. First of all,
none of us are giving up on other color lanterns. That's the theme of the storm.
We're not giving up on other color lanterns. I'm a little bit... I think they're trolling us with something on the next week's on preview. I'll get to it. But first, here's Charlie about Orange Lanterns wrote us an email. Long time, first time here, and I can't thank you all enough for the hours and hours and hours of entertainment, analysis, and recommendations over the past decade. You made me and my wife better and smarter fans. Like you mentioned, as we get into expanded universe and lanterns, we may end up seeing some of the other lantern cores is what a fantastic thing to write down and then have Dave speak into existence through an email. Cores is parentheses s. I always said corpse because I was reading it, but they're Green Lantern core.
Yeah.
So that's Corses. Anyway, something, continuing the email, something like 15 years ago, my wife and I came across an issue of Larflees, or the Orange Lantern, in a comic store. Having not been an avid reader of Green Lantern, we knew nothing about it. And we were like, what the fuck? We, of course, bought it and have joked about it since. We're always running around saying, hey, don't sleep on Larflees. After listening to the podcast yesterday, I joked there was a non-zero chance that such a phrase could come out of either of your mouths as you theorize in the storm about upcoming episodes. If there's any way you could work the phrase into a future episode. It just might make my wife's head explode with joy. We're loving the show and the pod and can't wait to hear more brilliant insights as the season progresses. So,
congratulations. You successfully bootstrapped Don't Sleep on Larfleeze into our podcast.
Yeah, I was like, perfect. Also, Neil, we should talk about it. I hinted last week that there are some lanterns that I don't think we're going to see this week on the series. And I think that Larfleeze might be a step too far as he is singular and he is greedy. I do like the idea that if you're going to introduce other lanterns, maybe it's not a full core. So Larfleeze is kind of attractive from that sense, mm-hmm. and that he's just an orange dude who's very covetous of his orange lantern power. What do you think? We are going to sleep on Larfleeze this first season?
I mean, I think I remain confident that there is a specific reason why they chose the name Lanterns for this show.
Yeah.
And the fact that in this universe, I also remain confident in my general knowledge of what I think James Gunn wants to do. Even though they've told us, oh, this show is not beholden to the larger universe, I think they want to do multicolored lanterns because that would be fun and would be a very sort of unique and advanced way to deliver the lanterns into this DC universe as opposed to the, you know, previous attempts, let's say, with Ryan Reynolds, where it's just pretty much the Green Lantern and they didn't really get into the lore because the Ryan Reynolds was too busy space mogging everyone. and so I do think that that's where what this first season is doing is leading us down the path toward there being the existence of multiple kinds of lanterns. It just might be more of a season two thing, potentially. Then again, we're also here. This is only episode, what number was this one? Four?
Four.
Okay, yeah. So we're halfway through the season and we just got the reveal of who the Manhunter is. So we need more mysteries. Right, yeah. We're not going to go another half of the season.
We need more mystery. We still have to know who shot, you know, Hal. I think that could be, but sure. I think you're mostly right. I think there's going to be a hard pivot. I've heard from people that have seen some episodes that episode 5 is like a pivot episode where it sort of resolves some stuff and then it moves into a much wider scope or a different scope. Mm-hmm. So I do think you're correct that we're going to go weirder, spacier.
Yeah,
more lantern-y. As we're continuing,
and that's where the other lanterns are. They're out in space.
And that's where, they're out in space. At least we think so. We might be having some reveals. I think they're trolling me on next week's episode's teaser with a drop of red in some person's eye that then spreads, and I'm like, oh, the red lanterns, who of course vomit up a red power, but. I think that's a lot more likely, more like a rage virus sort of thing. But I do think they're trolling specifically those of us that are looking for lanterns. Mm-hmm. I think throwing out a Hector Hammond reference you're not going to use is trolling people who know what's going on. I think throwing out a Chip reference is trolling specifically me. I think that the show is aware of what it's doing. So I do think we're getting to lanterns. I'm just... The fact that we haven't seen a ton of the Sinestro stuff yet makes me think we are building to a yellow lanterns. And I think it would be weird to introduce another lanterns before the yellow lanterns at this point. But that doesn't mean that we don't get to the yellow lanterns faster than I'm thinking about.
Sure. They've got time. They got 4 episodes. We could do yellow lantern reveal. And then we could reveal that the hit squad is red lanterns. This is all, I would say, within the realm of their capabilities on this show.
I think it's very, very possible.
Because the question is, what is this show beyond just a True Detective riff with Green Lanterns? Like, what are people going to want?
What does it ultimately want to say?
If I'm an HBO executive, then I want people to walk away from this show talking about something that it did that's crazy, man. Like that, you know, beyond just the fact that they riffed on True Detective and some of the special effects were pretty good and you know, it's a well-written show. Like, it can't just be a prestige drama. That something's gonna happen here. I would want something big and interesting and world establishing to happen in this first season of Lanterns so that you get that extra amount of hype, you know, and I would do it in like episode 6 or 7 before the finale, right? Like I would want people to be like going nuts about what's going to go on in the finale of this show to obviously juice the ratings.
Yeah, no, I think that would work out fine. Have you seen the Hal Jordan Halloween costume that came up online this week?
No, what is this?
It's the suit with a lot of yellow on it that they're complaining about from the trailer, mm-hmm. and definitely a domino mask that appears to also be yellow. So as we're looking at that, let's pretend it's not actually discussion of just costuming and design. This would lead to Hal turning at some point to some sort of part Sinestro adjacent sort of thing. But basically Hal the bad guy at the end of the series. Do you think that is still possible? That we're Sinestro is a false lead. We all think we're going to go with Sinestro. Hasn't formed the Yellow Lantern Corps yet, but he has, and it's actually Hal is being infected with the fear belief, whatever the Yellow Lantern belief is here in this version of the DCU. Do you think that's more or less reasonable?
I mean, I think that would accomplish the show's general goals, right? Which, as we know, which is establish these characters, establish the existence of the Lanterns and the way everything works there, and then have that all sort of sitting there in the background or ready to go for the future. But we also are assuming at this point that one of the other big goals is to exit the show with Jon Stewart being the sort of primary Green Lantern for Earth, so that he can show up in the next Superman movie as the primary Green Lantern for Earth. Or at least one of the two, you know, with Guy Gardner. But also,
he just has to show up as a Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Like, he's there, he's got the ring. Whether he's working for the Guardians or not, whether he's an official Guardian of Earth or not, I think is something that could be questionable.
But it also seems like this show, at least from the first episode, kind of wants to discard Hal.
I think,
or at least
possible,
move Hal out of the position of being sort of the Green Lantern of Earth so that the other ones can, you know, do their thing.
Don't think you cast Kyle Chandler to come back as Hal. So yes, I think you're right. But I also think that's an argument for maybe having him heel turn right at the end of the series. Mm-hmm. Is that, once again, I don't think Kyle Chandler's coming back. I did see an interview with his daughter that was like, at least we get to go to Comic-Cons together because I'll just go for Alien and mm-hmm. he could go for Green Lantern and we'll, you know, like live that like that sure. life together.
We don't, I mean, it's interesting because we don't really know, like with the MCU, we know that when some of these actors sign on, they sign on for like 10 movies, 10 appearances, right? We know how many movies Sam Jackson is going to show up in whatever phase we're in. But I feel like we don't entirely know whether they're going to keep Kyle Chandler around as Hal Jordan in the DCU going forward, mostly because they're just not saying it out loud.
Yeah. Like if he has a bunch of fun and they want to jerry rig a season 2 for him, as we've talked about in previous storms, I think there's a way to do that. Mm-hmm. This is a world where Patrick Stewart comes back and dies off as Professor X years and years and years later. Sure. So like in theory we could,
it's the Kurt Russell that. in the Godzilla show situation, yes. Where they're like, well, if we can convince him to come back for a season 2, then yeah, of course.
Then we'll do it. Here's another, let's assume at least that we're on some sort of direction where Hal is transitioning into the heel turn or has already done so. This is a fun theory I've also seen online. Hal has 2 rings. Mm-hmm. The reason we haven't seen it called to him and the reason there's like little bits of yellow in the ring that he keeps throwing around is that is Sinestro's ring and Hal has 2 rings.
Okay. So it's setting us up to a situation where John could take the ring, do the thing, make himself become part of the ring, or make himself the owner of the ring. And Hal's like, ha ha ha, but I have a backup.
Or it's more like maybe John Stewart can't do that because it's not the ring that's like assigned to him. So maybe that's why Hal isn't worried about John taking the thing and taking the oath, because it's like swearing on not a Bible or whatever because you can swear on
whatever
you want.
Rule they want to make up.
Right. It's like whatever rule they want to make up. But by not backing himself up into the ring for like a long period of time and all these different things, he's able to sort of like conceal it's the ring. I think the backup.
So if he does have two, the Guardians don't know it.
Correct.
Which is a huge omission on their part, because like if that's Sinestro's ring, wouldn't you think they would have made sure to log that into evidence after they put Sinestro in prison?
I mean, or you just take it and you unmake it, but at that point, have you also destroyed the evidence? Like, if you just make a fake ring, submit it to the Guardians are like, Sinestro, we sentence you. It's like, John took Sinestro down. Something happened in 2006. Hal took Sinestro down. Something happened in 2006 that made Hal stop backing himself up, which means stop basically trusting the Guardians and the ring system, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. And everything that happened in there, I think, is either what this episode would like us to believe, I think, from a storytelling perspective, is what we talked about in the calm. Every time Hal makes a decision, he's ultimately right. Mm-hmm. Hal is 10 steps ahead. But the question, I think, that is going to be the fun thing is like 10 steps ahead doing what?
Right. Like, well, and I definitely think that it is something potentially antagonistic toward the Guardians.
Yeah.
Because there's an inference in this show, in the fabric of this show, that says that the Guardians, something's off about the Guardians, which would, go with the sort of thematic through line that we were thinking, like, oh, all right, it's not just the story about space cops and how they're eternally good. Maybe it's a story about how there is institutional problems with space cops as there are with real cops in our real life, which would also be a very true detective thing. You know?
I believe it. I think it's very possible we go in all of those directions. We did get a ring question from Phelan. Hey, Phelan, welcome back. Here it comes. All you have to do is wear the ring and say the oath, maybe this shit is more like the Santa Claus than I realize. Does this mean anyone could do that, worthy or not? This raises so many more fucked up possibilities about who killed Hal, if the mantle of Green Lantern can just be stolen. Raw dogging a rando from a dive bar takes courage. Fucking that lady again after you're 90% sure she's an ancient intergalactic genocidal flock camera with a husband who just tried to kill you with his weenie out is truly fucking fearless. I'm in the middle of one. I'm in the middle on the Red Lanterns theory. That's definitely the Sector 666 storyline, but I'd rather them take their time before going all in on other lantern colors. Sinestro's yellow ring was his thing alone for like 45 years of the comic run. When they debuted the Sinestro Corps, it felt earned and like an obvious destination. The Red Lanterns were cool and revenge and wrath always at play, but by the time we go into the full spectrum, I had this boiling frog realization that they've turned them into mood rings. If they want to take their time and have a yellow ringed classic black and blue suited Sinestro team up with Lex and Gorilla Grodd for some Legion of Doom shenanigans, I'd prefer that we start the event. Prefer that before we start the events that would kick off the Blackest Night. I think that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's around the same way. I do think though, what Phelan is picking up on
is dangerous territory in the sense that it could become very goofy very quickly and lose some people who aren't hoping for it because they think the comic books are fun, you know?
Yeah. Also like, it's like a lot of the power creep stuff we've been talking about. You can't kind of like undo that once it's done. I think this is part of why I think Red Lanterns would have to be like a step to like a whole bunch of like color powers, or Yellow Lanterns, I think, is going to be more interesting as a like debut, sort of, because it is, as Phelan's talking out, the direct antagonist power.
Mm-hmm.
And so like having going with lanterns being like green versus yellow for a long period of time is much more narratively, I think, interesting, than going from like green and just there are other colors behind greens. How many colors? You don't know. Don't worry about it. We might just add a new color whenever we want. The universe
is very big.
Yeah. Humans can't even see the full spectral colors. There's been a bunch of lantern debates about colors and how much each of them are cool. And of course, you know, don't sleep on Larfleeze. But there's been all of this discussion, and I do think it's like power creep. Once you pull that off, that's kind of what the show needs to be about. So if they think season two, if they get to season two, again, still looking good that that's a possibility. If they think season two is something that they want to do on television, that they want to do something like another detective story, it might be too small or too, frankly, like James Bondish, like hunting Spectre, to have a bunch of different colored lanterns. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I don't know, Captain Planety. There's a bunch of comparisons that have come alongside the expanding Green Lantern mythos that I don't think this show is interested in reclaiming.
Sure. It's a unique take on the idea of the lanterns. And I am, you know, as much as like James Gunn's Superman is just a very faithful Superman adaptation, right? Faithful to the whole like vibe of Superman. He did some weird stuff there. It got weird.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the moment where this show gets weird, because it hasn't quite done that. It's done most of what we expected it to do, right? It's the true detective cop drama. It has lanterns looking for a manhunter. This is all very classic Green Lantern things to do. It hasn't really done anything super weird yet. And I'm kind of waiting.
Yeah, like even another Peacemaker, planet to talk to a pink dude, and that's the weirdest that's gotten.
Like, as a person who has watched all of the DCU things so far, Peacemaker gets really weird at the end of its first season and into its second season. And that was kind of a very low budget experiment built around the idea that John Cena is very charming, and it works really well, but also it gets into like some crazy, like multi-dimensional fascism shit that I did not necessarily see coming. And that is what sort of endeared me to that show as it went on further and further, right? Because ultimately it's a show about a dude who just like murders people because he thinks that's the right thing to do. And that can only go on so far. So I'm waiting for Lanterns to have that element added into it.
I would say where I would think this could possibly end is we get a John that doesn't have to defeat Hal, but basically has to do to Hal what Hal had to do to Sinestro. So basically has to like put him down, put him away. Mm-hmm. And then John goes, and the Guardians are like, great job. You could take over as like the full Guardian of the Sector. This guy, Gardner guy, keeps getting involved in DC Palestine, and we can't be having that. Mm-hmm. So like, you now take over. And he's just like, you think I need this? Like, gives them the ring back, manifests his own ring, and being like, I'm the Green Lantern of Earth, and then just goes to be...
I'm an independent contractor lantern.
This dude doesn't need a ring to manifest stuff, and that's kind of all a Green Lantern like needs to do. He could be the guy that isn't just manifesting his suit, he's manifesting the ring that he uses because he's a ring person. I think that's way out there. But in the season, in next week's episode, we see John Stewart happen across a very exploded town of Rushville. Mm-hmm. He's carrying the lantern. I don't know if he has the ring. He just has the lantern, mm-hmm. which I assume means he's like rushing to bring it to Hal, who needs it because whatever Hal's done, he's run out of charge. And, sure. you know, because he ran out of charge, he wasn't able to make an explosion bubble. And so things have actually started exploding in town. And so he shows up, and I'm just like, what if he is able to power himself with the lantern? Mm-hmm. Like, what if that's something we know that's something that John Stewart could be able to theoretically do, because it's something he kind of does in the comics. And he manifested the bird in episode two. So I think there's a way to do this where we have Hal give the full-on argument about why the Guardians are bullshit, And that gives us our conclusion that the Guardians are bullshit. But also at the end of that argument, Hal's like, and I just like a little yellow on my suit. And the nerds are like, holy shit, that we know that's bad. We don't want the yellow on the suit. But using this as a way to sort of bootstrap the beginning of the Sinestro Corps, as in Sinestro has already converted Hal, I think is like a cool way to end Lanterns, much like the title screen, where it's sort of like we zoom out of black, but when we end, we're fully yellow. Mm-hmm. I think it could be, we could be introducing the Yellow Lantern Corps through Hal rather than through Sinestro, because Sinestro's already done it. We just don't get that reveal until a little bit later. But I guess my question for Valen then would be, if it's just Hal and Sinestro, is like two Lantern, Yellow Lanterns, like enough before we overload it with the core? Like, is it just like, because then if you're doing that, are you like, there's a bunch of different colored cores? Are you just like, we discovered that opposite of green is yellow, and you have a whole story about how each one of these other colors emerges, so it doesn't feel like a, hey, it's a mood ring.
Sure.
Depending on like what thing, you know, you have.
I mean, I would think that an ambitious writer's room would want to tackle that as a project. Does feel like a season two thing to me. But I like that. I mean, I like that if they're going to bring Jon Stewart back for more stuff, that a season two would be about him having to deal with the Yellow Lantern-ness of it all. And whether or not that figures into any of like the movie plots is hard to say, right? Like Jon Stewart could take some time and deal with whatever Superman needs him to help with in the next movie before coming back to the Yellow Lantern, right? Like Hal could disappear and Jon may not know exactly where he is, kind of thing. And in season two, Jon is like, oh, you know, Hal has reemerged as a Yellow Lantern. Now I need to deal with this shit, right? Whereas they could tell the audience at the end of this season, that's where Hal is, you know?
I think it's very possible. I also think it's something they could kick down the line, because if we don't know about the Yellow Lanterns fully, if it's just all we know is our bad dads turn on us and suddenly there's an opposing power, I think that's a much easier world-building narrative to swallow than like, there's a fear god and he manifests as this opposing color and the Green Lantern's actually weak to this color, because then all of a sudden you got to have him in Man of Tomorrow being like, oh no, yellow, and like spend any amount of time explaining why. Like, I think that also is difficult. So if it's something that we are learning along with Jon Stewart, if Jon Stewart doesn't have access into like any sort of galactic history of the Yellow Lantern Corps because he doesn't trust the Guardians and therefore doesn't trust any of their intel, then yeah, we could have an exploration of what the Yellow Lantern actually means as its own story and not have to saddle a normie audience with anything too weird.
Sure. And you can also have him exist in a movie with Superman where he's dealing with a threat to Earth, or you know, whatever the premise of, because okay, so I'm now looking up Man of Tomorrow plot, and it's just the whole premise is Superman and Lex reluctantly team up against Brainiac, who I don't think has anything to do with any of this.
I mean, he's green.
Okay. He's extraterrestrial, I guess. He's not from around here, but that you could have a situation where Jon has to go deal with that and not really have to talk too much about the plot of this first season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or the especially future plot of the Jon v. Hal and Sinestro story.
Neil, do you think the sort of like showdown that I'm describing best happens in what time period of Lanterns? Is it something we want to see in 2016 and then the 2026 Hal that we find dead has already had this fight with Jon Stewart? Or do we want to see this Jon Stewart discover that the Hal body is a fake and there's a Yellow Lantern on the loose? What is your sort of, what time period do you think we're going to have the biggest conclusion in?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because I feel like the next maybe two episodes will give us a better idea, but it seems like the show is slow rolling and wants us to kind of forget about the 2026 part of this timeline at the moment. Right.
Yeah.
So I think it is something where, you know, maybe it is this show plays out mostly in 2016 and Hal disappears, you know, something happens and Hal disappears. And then it recontextualizes the scene from 2026 where John maybe thought Hal was gone at this point. And so when he shows up and they find him dead, it's more of a like, well, I thought he was already dead, you know, like what's he doing here? And that could be part of us being sent off into the next act of the story. So, but you know, if then over the next couple episodes, they revisit the 2026 part of it all, which I assume is where Guy Gardner comes in.
Right? I would assume so.
We do know Nathan Fillion's in the show. We've seen him in the trailers talking to John in jail. So I assume that is a post Superman Guy Gardner.
Correct.
But I guess it could be 2016 Guy Gardner in theory.
I don't think there is a 2016 Guy Gardner.
Yeah, like we don't know when.
Hal says he's the only human lantern this episode.
Yeah, okay. So that leads me to the assumption that we are going to spend more time in 2026. So I guess maybe that's where the conclusion is. Or maybe it's all a ruse and that's like the last scene of the last episode is Guy Gardner shows up to be like, oh yeah, guess what? I know more about this dead Hal Jordan body, and let me tell you about the Yellow Lanterns and what we've been dealing with out there.
What do you think is going to happen next week, Neil?
Lots of explosions.
58 seconds of the trailer. Yeah, explosions. Lots of explosions.
I think that you know we're building to this arc of will John take the ring? So I think you could be right in the sense that like, maybe John either doesn't need the ring or maybe he could power himself off the lantern. And that's kind of the big reveal, the big turn, right? Because we got twist number one out of the way. We have been told who the Manhunter is. And I think that notably, it looks like Hal maybe goes to town to try to deal with the situation and it goes poorly because at one point he's like injured. And then it's up to John to sort of reveal how powerful he is in order to solve it. But maybe we don't even get that far. Like maybe it's just about Hal failing in the next episode. And we're left off with the question of what's John going to do? You know, is he going to take the ring for himself? Is he going to manifest something of his own? What's going to happen?
Yeah, I think from what I could put together in the teaser, the only sequence that I think is going to happen is there's a person who's throwing Hal Jordan around the house. And it is a black man. And I can't tell if it's Aaron Pierre or not. They're very intentionally cutting it. So he only has like a motion blurred face, even if you frame by frame it. Mm-hmm. But there is also a black man who is having that red stuff dripped in his eye. So I wonder if there's some sort of technology that allows like a person to be in, to be a physical challenge for a lantern.
Yeah. If Zoe like, puts some sort of action plan into action where she's like, all right, now I'm going to juice this guy on my team and send him after Hal.
So I think, I think the whole town goes after Hal because they're like, he's coming after the thing that keeps us disease free. Like, why would we give that up?
Sure.
So I think that's a lot of what we're seeing in terms of like the car or the truck that has like guns that Hal's sort of like shooting energy things at and that are shooting at him. And then somebody fighting him, maybe is John Stewart has been infected with some sort of rage thing. Maybe not. I think the thing that is most interesting to me in terms of what I think John Stewart thinks right now is he thought, you know, he thought that maybe Zoe was the Manhunter, but was able to sort of like play it cool, still, you know, not call her on it, sleep with her, depending on when he decided that she was possibly the Manhunter. He's also the person that's had a memory of a genocide downloaded into his head. Mm-hmm. So like, what did he see when that happened that allows him to still be so cool now and is next week sort of like devastation going to allow him to flip because he's going to see something that reminds him that, you know, this Manhunter, who he kind of loves when it's in women form, is actually this robot that has caused a mass genocide like 30 years ago.
Like, she changes forms and he's like, oh, shit, I've seen you in my nightmares.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, no. And so I feel like next week we end in a way where,
or contrary theory, she does something to him that shows him that maybe that what was downloaded into his head wasn't the full story. To try to get him on her side.
What I'm trying to build to is Jon Stewart pulling Zoe's heart out of her chest and then waiting to see if it turns to crystal. And then we end the episode just not knowing if he killed the right person or not.
I mean,
that seems like an episode of television to me.
That seems like an episode of True Detective, if there ever was one.
And then next week's episode, we just see a crystal heart in an evidence bag. And we're like, oh, thank God it was the Manhunter. But what is the show about now? I think that is super possible. I just think HBO showed us, you were right, a lot of things blowing up, which makes me think that's the end of the episode. A lot of things blow up. And then he walks into town with the lantern and then Carrie's there with all of her cops or other people around her. And they're looking at each other real weird. And then I'm like, and then what happens? Mm-hmm. I feel like that's close to the end, but we'll see how
it's
goes.
Is Jon Stewart still a good guy moment?
I also think the new piece of lore that the Manhunters can't maintain a human shaped heart after it stops beating is, or after it's been removed, I think is interesting, because I just feel like that's a Chekhov's Mularam from Indiana Jones.
In a show that has not shied away from being gross at times. Yeah.
I think someone's going to get their heart pulled out.
Yeah.
Whether at it's least the Manhunter or not, that seems like at least something I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
Happened to that it's poor funny, cow?
Because it's like the show is like, we can be gross, but then it's also like, we're like True Detective. And I'm like, yeah, that he's going to pull somebody's heart out and it's not going to crystallize. Like, that's the fucked up answer.
Yeah. You're going to be like, whoops, I picked the wrong dude. And then Hal Jordan's going to be like, was it worth it? And the episode's going to end.
Garrett Dillahunt's going to be looking up from the floor, dying, being like, I just had cancer.
Cannot wait to figure out what is happening next week on Lanterns. Neil, any other predictions you have as to what's going to happen next week that we need to talk about?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I think, you know, it seems like, and the show, like I said, has been very good at being judicious with how it's using its visual effects budget, but also using that as an excuse to slow roll some of the Green Lantern stuff. And one of the things we talked about at the very beginning of covering this show was they're obviously holding that stuff back, right? From the initial trailers, there was like that first trailer that had like no Green Lantern stuff in it. and then there was a trailer that had a little bit. And now the first four episodes have had kind of just a little bit. You know, we're tracking manifestations and we're only getting to like three or four every episode. Eventually that's going to change. And eventually the show is going to decide, okay, the audience is ready to see how weird and sort of big and crazy this can get, because we know that they will do that. They did it in the Superman movie. So I wonder if this is the point where it turns, or if we're still going to be sort of slow rolling the Lantern Ring manifestations.
This whole series is just so now Aaron Pierre shows up in every DCU project because Nathan Fillion can finally rest as being the connective tissue of the shared universe.
Yeah. I mean, hell, I don't think we even know for sure that Nathan Fillion's character makes it out of this series.
I mean, that is possible.
Hold on, let me look up the credits again for Man of Tomorrow. Is he listed in Man of Tomorrow? Like, maybe.
All right.
Oh yeah, he is. Okay.
Okay.
So he's at least makes it to that movie. But then again, you know, that movie could be set 2 months before the 2026 events of this movie, series. So, you know, it's a puzzle for later.
Who knows? Thank you for listening to our coverage of The Weenie. I love that episode title. I can't wait to see what episode 5 is called and what happens and if we got anything right or if we're too high on our own supply. But I want you to go out there, be excellent to each other, and inform your spouses that we do not sleep on larflees on this podcast.